This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play via the iHeartRadio app.
Cooch, it's definitely not a day-to-day thing. So this is a, we'll wait till we get official word, but he's definitely out. We're going to be out for a little while here. I'm not going to put a timetable on it until we get official word, but he's in the short term here, he's definitely out.
And that update has not really changed. As John Cooper spoke to the media a little bit ago, Dave Michigan and I were down there, and we heard from Mikhail Sergachev and Braden Point as well. We're live here at Amalie Arena. Glad you're with us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. And we've got a bunch of questions we got to get to on Twitter that we didn't get to yesterday. But, Dave, here we are. Good to be with you again here. Cold,
yeah.
Shivering as we are.
I brought my heavier jacket, and it doesn't really seem to be doing much good. That's what really... If we bring the hard-hitting content, people love tuning in to hear us complain about how cold it is in the arena.
You know, people
as we watch as we watch a private morning skate for both teams that nobody else can come in and watch.
So what you're saying is we're privileged?
We're sounding pretty whiny right now, I think.
We are. Have no fear, though. We're battling through the conditions, and here we are getting set for Lightning.
Lambeau Field, though, this is not.
That's right.
With the press box window open. Definitely not.
You know, I was thinking about this, Mish. You know how I like to ponder things sometimes beyond our show. And I told you off the air, and I'll share it with the audience today. It feels like listening to John Cooper the last 2 days that his balloon has been popped a little bit, wind coming out of the sails, however you want to break down the circumstance. I think it's a little deflating. I think he's resigned himself, and he probably knows that this is going to be longer than it is shorter. He's kind of mentioned that, but you just get the sense they're just waiting officially to make that announcement that he's going to be out for an extended period of time in Kucherov. So I just, again, reading his body language, I could be completely off, but that's how I'm interpreting it. But I do think if there is one positive when it comes to Kucherov being out, and let's face it, maybe I am really grasping for straws here when you start talking about arguably the best offensive player not named Connor McDavid out of the lineup for an extended period of time, is the fact that this is now twice in the last 2 years where this injury has happened early enough in the season where you can adjust to him being out. This isn't something that's happening five games before the playoffs where you really have to say, you know what, that kind of changes the complexion of our team a little bit. You know, we're really going to have to start figuring some things out. You know, maybe we're going to give a guy like Corey Perry an opportunity in playoff game one, but if that doesn't work out, then we're going to immediately go to the second option. I feel like you have 79 games to kind of figure this out, and if there's a team that can do it, it is the Tampa Bay Lightning. So it's not a perfect scenario. The team they're playing here tonight certainly is going to have a large say in where not only they finish, but Tampa Bay finishes. And you've heard us talk about this a number of times. I don't really care where Tampa Bay finishes in the standings as long as they get into the playoffs, because anything can happen, as we know. But I think for the Lightning, it is an opportunity to, once you get past the disappointment of Kucherov not being in the lineup for an extended period of time, I think now mentally you can start getting in your mind what you have to do to get ready for the whole year, maybe with him being out, or half the season, whatever it is, and understand that now it's your time to figure it out. And I think there's enough time for them to do that. And it gives a guy like Corey Perry an opportunity right off the bat to mesh with his teammates in a way that maybe he didn't think when he first signed with the Lightning.
Yeah, he's certainly going to get an opportunity playing with Point and Palat, and we'll see how they do. The Kucherov news, I just want to clarify something that you said. We don't have a timetable yet.
We don't.
But John Cooper did say that he does not expect that Kucherov is going to miss as much time as he did last year, which was 56 games. So when you say, you know, they have 79 games to figure this out, I think, at least based on what Coop said, the hope is that it's way shorter than that.
Yes.
But longer than
10 games,
the immediate
maybe.
Future. Yeah. So they're going to have to go some time here without him. But at some point, he is going to return, and that return will happen, get ready, Twitter bots, before the start of the playoffs.
Don't upset our
Twitter bots.
I
won't even add anything.
Don't even go
that.
Down that rabbit hole, Dave.
It sounds like, based on what we know now, which is admittedly not much, because they haven't gotten an official timetable released.
Right.
But it sounds as though game one of the playoffs will not be when he returns. It would if they can get in the playoffs, which is certainly something we are going to be talking about, as we always do.
Sure.
Every regular season, nothing is guaranteed and nothing is given. You have to earn it.
Correct.
But his return will be sooner than that. So that's positive
that
in
is
my
positive.
Mind.
That is
And I
positive.
Guess if you're going to have, to your point, if you're going to have a guy like Kucherov miss significant time, it's never ideal, but maybe it gives you more options if it happens in game three rather than with three games left
yes.
in the regular season.
Correct. It gives you an opportunity to figure out where you're headed as a team. Jan Rutta is back. I think that's a sneaky big deal just from the standpoint when we talk about depth on the back end. Bogosian's already out for an extended period of time. You know, you don't want to keep digging into that defensive pool in Syracuse if you don't have to. Not saying those guys can't come up for a game or two, Dave, but you don't want that to be a situation where it's more than that. And it was good to see him out there skating, so we'll see how that plays out moving forward.
Yeah, good that he didn't miss a game, basically.
Yes,
because
yes.
he basically missed a little more than half the game.
Yes.
He missed half the game, the second half of the game, and then he missed half of the first period.
Yes.
So that would have tested the Lightning's depth as well, because Cal Foote is not yet ready. Getting close, but not yet ready to return.
Yep. And that'll be interesting to see. You know, you would assume, Dave, that Cal Foote, once he's ready to go, he slots in one of those top six roles, being a younger guy who has a first-round pick, and, you know, certainly he made some strides last year. You want to see what he can do this year. And, you know, now that depth gets a little bit better with him back in the lineup. But, you know, certainly that was the news, at least earlier today, about Cooch. And I think you bring up a good point that it's not going to be the whole season. It'll be a portion
As far
of it.
As we know now.
At least from what John Cooper has said. At least from what John Cooper had said. If you want to react to anything regarding Cooch, you can at Bolts Radio.
Let's get into the
right
point Palat Perry, because Braden did meet with the media and, you know, he said basically just it's different, but you just try and go out and play well. I mean, Braden is not one
pretty humble guy.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. And he's very straightforward and plain spoken in his responses. And I think that that's kind of how he looks at things, which is probably a really healthy way to look at things.
Right. He's not on Twitter a lot. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think somebody asked him a question. What do you think about something? He said, honestly, I don't spend a lot of time thinking about that stuff. I think the question was, do you think that you grew as a player? Dave Randorf asked it. Do you think that you grew as a player last year in Kucherov's absence because you didn't have him there? And he's like, I don't really think about that.
Right.
So in a way that, you know, it's very uncomplicated, right? Like, he kind of goes out, he knows what he needs to do, and he tries to do it every game, no matter who his line mates are. He obviously understands that he's not playing with Kucherov.
Yes.
He's playing with somebody else, Corey Perry. And we'll see how they do. But what I'm very interested to see is how Point and Palat mesh with a guy who is, he's not only a net front presence guy in 5-on-5 play as players are moving all over the ice. We've seen it already this year. You know, he's not just standing in front of the net. He'll go behind the net. You know, he'll cycle. But he is down low. How will Point and Palat kind of mix with a guy who is primarily a front of the net guy?
Yep.
And I think that is an open-ended question. I think there is some potential there for that line to be very effective, but it will certainly have a different look than when Kucherov is on there, or Stamkos, or Cirelli, or pick a player.
Sure.
Blake Coleman played with them a little bit last year. I mean, Blake will go to the front of the net, certainly, but Perry is different, right? And so let's see how that line looks and how they move the puck around when they have it, hopefully a lot, in the offensive zone tonight.
What it should do for Braden Point, it should become more of a shooter. Because Corey Perry basically, at this point in his career, and he's been like that throughout, go to the front of the net, get your stick on the puck, and just create a lot of chaos.
Yeah,
he's got really good hands, as we've seen in the preseason. Had a couple of decent scoring looks in the Washington game. But, I mean, I think if I'm Braden Point, and he may not look at it and say, you know, did you grow as a player from last year to this year with Kucherov being out? We can certainly look.
Yeah.
Did he grow as a player? I'm sure the numbers weren't what it what he wanted them to be, but that doesn't mean he didn't become a better player. I think your numbers are going to drop off if a guy like Kucherov isn't on your line. But I think the one thing about Point is that he's got a sneaky good shot. Mm-hmm. And I think, especially coming off the rush, if you know that Perry and Palat are guys that are going to crash the net, Palat will do that too. He's got a lot of jam in his game, Dave. You don't want to be too fancy. I'm not sure how much give and go is going to be on that line. I mean, Kucherov, we know that's what they do.
Yeah.
So you wonder if Point is going to be the guy that says, as Perry said yesterday, get it to Pointer and just let him go.
Right.
If that's keep it simple, stupid, get some shots on net and see if those guys can just converge in front of the net and create some chaos. Maybe I'm oversimplifying it. Maybe Braden.
You may be. I mean, what we saw last year from opposition players when Kucherov was not there, Point had very little room with yes. which to work, and we've seen that this year too. I mean, you have to. You have to try and take yes. away his time and space best you can, and then he has to work extremely hard to carry the puck in and then try and maintain possession and
yes.
potentially make a play. So it may not be as simple as just shooting.
Sure.
If he brings
sure.
it in, there's a guy in the way. What Kucherov allows Point to do is get it to Kucherov, because Kucherov is very elusive
right.
too, and both players are extremely smart. But we may see a different look. And maybe instead of Point actually carrying it behind the net, I mean, you figure that he's probably the first guy in the zone because he carries it a lot, but he can make a play where Perry goes behind the net. So that curl-up play that we see him do a lot, maybe then he tucks it behind the net and Perry's there. Now you have a bit of a cycle game
grind
going.
A little bit.
Right. But they're going to have to figure that out. They're going to figure that out as they build some chemistry with one another and they figure out what the other team is doing as far as how they are defending those three guys.
You need somebody to be a threat on the wing to shoot the puck. I think when you play with Braden Point, Kucherov obviously is that guy. Stamkos
yeah.
can be that guy. I'm not sure on that line with Perry and Palat, although we saw Palat last year really open up some eyes, I thought, with his one-timer when
yeah.
he was filling in with Kucherov.
And that may be a power play question.
Correct. But I'm wondering, 5-on-5, to your point, Dave, is there more dump and chase? Maybe it's Pointer.
Yeah.
Carries the puck
Point
in.
Point doesn't tend to dump the puck in. I mean, he does. He kind of chips it in and goes
and
gets
that's what
it.
I mean. And, go, and yeah. gets it that way to free up himself, because he might be the one-man breakout. He may, to your point, have to dump it in behind the net and let those guys grind it out. But I am wondering that dynamic, who becomes, I don't want to say the threat offensively, how do they generate their offense?
Yeah.
You know, is it going to be more meat and potatoes? I don't know. I mean, we're throwing it out there because I think a lot of us want to see what Corey Perry can do in this role.
Yeah.
And, you know, based off of what we saw in the preseason, he was somebody that's at least in front of the net, had the hands to make plays. And you would think you're going to get some opportunities with Braden Point tonight against the Florida Panthers and moving forward. So we'll see how that plays out. Cooper was asked, too, about Brian Elliott. We took some questions. There were some questions on Twitter about
yeah.
when do you think Elliott's going to
play
next.
Well, there's a back-to-back next week.
Yeah.
That's the obvious answer as far as when
yes.
I would expect that he would get in.
And you looked at the schedule, and you didn't think he was going to get this game tonight.
I mean, and then you got 3 days off and Colorado coming in Saturday.
Yeah.
So the tea leaves would tell me that Vasilevsky, all things being equal, is starting Saturday. And then we've never actually asked Franjean about this, and maybe he would tell us if we did. But when they determine which goalie plays which end of the back-to-back, I wonder if they just go to Vasilevsky.
And say which
and
one do you want.
Which one do you want, or is it the coach's decision?
Well, Vasi would say, I want both.
Well, I understand that. But is it more
right.
the goalie...
Yeah,
how the goalie is feeling, where the goalie, because he is, this isn't true for most goalies.
Sure.
Most teams, the coach picks in consultation with the goalie coach.
That's true.
But Vasilevsky is in a class by himself, or at least in a class with very few others in the league, where I wouldn't be shocked if he had some input on it, and maybe more than just input, maybe he lets them know, you know, I think I want this game. And maybe it's not.
Yeah.
But, like, I was talking with Steve Goldstein this morning, and, you know, Buffalo and Pittsburgh are the two opponents. Now, Buffalo's gotten off to a good start this year, mm-hmm. but I think most people would say, all right, Pittsburgh's the tougher opponent, which is the second game. So he was like, Elliott's getting Buffalo, right? Because you want to save Vasilevsky for the
The Pittsburgh game.
The Pittsburgh game, if you believe that Pittsburgh will give the Lightning a harder game, and it's the second half of a back-to-back and all of that, but it doesn't always work out that way. You know, sometimes...
No, it doesn't.
There was a time when Vasilevskiy very regularly took the first game, regardless. And whether it was Louis Domingue or Curtis McElhinney, that was the guy getting the second game.
Yes.
Regardless of the opponent. Now, there are other times, I think last year, where the travel was less intense because you were going to a place and staying there when the Lightning had back-to-backs. I want to say McElhinney sometimes had the first game and Vasi got the second. Remember early in the year they had those back-to-back games in Nashville?
Yes.
And that was McElhinney's first start
because
he had been hurt, but that was the first game.
Let's call Curtis up and ask him.
I remember, you know, he played the first game in that particular set. Now, that's different because it was the same opponent.
Yeah.
And you weren't traveling after the first game, but that was when Vasilevskiy didn't play the first game, and there have been other instances like that. But I think, by and large, if we were to look at kind of the overall data, if it were available to us, in the time that Vasilevskiy has been the number one with a backup, whether it's Peter Budaj or Louis Domingue, Eddie Pasquale, Curtis McElhinney, Christopher Gibson. Pick your goalie.
Yeah, right.
Gibson didn't get in to a back-to-back with Vasilevskiy. He got in when Vasilevskiy stayed home when they went to Detroit.
That's right.
But in that instance, I think the majority of them, Vasi has gotten the first game. But it's not always that way.
Yeah, it's a good point. Hit us up on Twitter at Bolts Radio.
Yeah, let's get some questions
here. Al, this is from yesterday. He said Twitter was blowing up with wild suggestions about what the Lightning lines should look like. So here's my two cents.
Okay.
Radish takes Kucha's spot. Leave the other three lines like they were in Washington. Not time to panic yet.
So one thing Coop said, and it was not in relation to why Perry is on the line with Point and Plot, but it may have played at least a little bit of a factor, and that is that Cirelli, Stamkos, and Killorn has been a very productive line for the Lightning. He said maybe that's been our most productive line to this point.
Yeah.
So if you want to keep those three guys together, then neither Stamkos nor Cirelli nor Killorn, who theoretically could go onto the line with Point and Palat,
yes,
although usually Cirelli and Killorn are a pair, if you're not going to move any of those three, then you're looking at who else are we going to move? Al makes the point about Radish because Radish can shoot the puck.
Yeah.
Right? But Radish also has all of two games of NHL experience. So
maybe down the road.
And the other part of this, maybe down the road, the other part of this is last year you had a really effective line of Colton, Maroon, and Joseph. And if you move Perry, you can just slot Joseph in to that line and reunite that line. But this is fluid, right?
It is. I mean, that's why we talked about if you happen to do this earlier in the season, maybe Radish down the road gets that opportunity.
Yeah.
I mean, you have some time to figure that out. I agree with you. When Al first sent that tweet out, my thought was they're just not going to put a young guy up like that on the first line.
Yeah.
They're just not. Not to say it may not happen, Al. I just don't think it's going to happen. Al also, on another question, he said, should the NHL modify the cross-check rule?
He did.
He said there's a difference between a true cross-check and a push. I know it's easy. It's the easy way out to call everything, but they're not calling everything. Still no consistency in the call. I will agree with that. There is no consistency. I mean, in the preseason, I think in the preseason they called cross-checking a lot more than they called in the regular season. Would you agree?
They have a stricter enforcement of the cross-checking rule now. The rule is not any different. They're just enforcing it in a more strict way. Because, I mean, look, anytime you push somebody with your stick, theoretically, it's a cross check. So for all these people who are saying, you know, they didn't change the rule. Like they're just changing how they're calling it now. And you know, a cross check is a cross check is a cross check. No, that's not necessarily the case because there are degrees of how forcefully you are pushing your stick into your opponent in the side, in the rib, in the neck, in the shoulder. Whatever. So, like, clearly the Scott Mayfield cross-check on Kucherov was a cross-check.
That was a big
deal.
It was
a cross-check,
yes,
and they missed that in the playoffs. But more significantly, it caused an injury to Kucherov. And that play, along with other plays that were not called, was the impetus for the league to say, all right, here's how we want you to call cross-checking in terms of what is a penalty and what is not a penalty.
Yes.
This is where it's really helpful. We do an annual broadcast meeting. It used to be in New York, and you know, we would fly up there and spend a couple
nice.
Of days.
Yeah.
And you know, they're usually similar. Like yeah. you know, you hear from the commissioner and you hear from the rules committee and you hear from the player safety. And like when we've talked about
yeah.
the DOPS,
right.
a lot of what I'm telling the fans, I've learned from going to these meetings and hearing the group of people that are in the DOPS explain what they look at and how they make a determination. Now, there are other ways to get this information. I'm just saying these broadcast meetings are very helpful. So we've had them on Zoom the last couple of years. So this year we saw a video explaining what is now considered a cross-check penalty and what is not.
Right.
And if was it Al? Was it Al's question?
Yes, it was Al.
If
yeah.
Al is referring to the Sergachev cross-check in overtime, that is now a penalty. Like Sergachev said afterward, I felt I pushed the guy. He did, but he propelled his stick forward. That is now cross-checking, even if it's not at the level of Mayfield on Kucherov.
Yes.
Because they want to avoid the sorts of injuries
that
come from a very aggressive cross-check, which right. is also a penalty.
Yeah.
What is not a penalty? If there is a guy, let's say, digging for a puck in the corner, and you are a defenseman, and you come in and you lead with your stick, but your stick is basically against your body.
Yeah.
So the stick makes contact first, but you're using it basically as part of your body to check. That is okay. So to me, as I understand it, watch the player's arms. If the player's arms get extended, that is supposed to be called.
You should be going to the box.
You should be going to the box.
Yeah.
But if you're leading with your stick.
Yes.
In the position that a cross-check penalty would be called, but you're not extending your arms, so you literally are pushing the guy. You're pushing him with your stick.
Yeah.
And maybe you then propel it out, but once you've made contact, it's bad for radio. I'm gesturing here, but you know what I'm
saying?
Let's
videotape this, guys. Come on.
Like, your arms are against your body.
Yeah.
You make contact, and then yeah. once you make contact, you push the guy with your stick, but you're not pushing the stick into the guy's body, into his rib cage. That should be okay. So when Al says no consistency and you say no consistency, like we've had three games this year. I don't know that I've seen a bunch of plays where I'm like, well, that should be cross-checking this year and it's not. Or that was a blatant cross-check that was missed. Or why did they call that cross-checking that's too strict a standard
sure.
for enforcement? All I can say is, based on what I learned at the start of the year, the Sergachev play in overtime is now a penalty.
Yep.
Referees can choose not to call it, but they're supposed to. And the players are supposed to adjust.
I'm just going
to
say this. If we think for once that play is going to be called consistently, just because it's being enforced.
And he did it twice, too.
Yeah, I think we are terribly mistaken. Because
you think it's the standard is going to loosen.
It's. I think it is.
That tends to happen.
It does. It does. And I think
but
that's
we're
part
in game
of the problem.
Three.
Yeah, I know. But what this is this is not giving the officials the benefit of the doubt based off of their previous action
yeah.
when it comes to calling plays. That's just me. I think most people would agree with that. You need to show me the whole year you're going to be consistent
yeah.
with that call. Now, if you are, I'm going to applaud.
Yeah,
that.
And
I'm
mean, we saw that.
That
with some of the hooking. Interference, like when they introduced those rules,
yeah, right.
they were called really letter to the law, and now they've loosened it somewhat, and they've loosened it through that even first couple of years, but it's still at a stricter standard than it was before they said we need to call this more strictly.
And then, of course, there's the standard of the regular season, and
yeah.
then there's the standard of the postseason.
And we've talked about that.
Which is we have. So
right.
if you want to react to that, you can. At Bolts Radio, weigh in. We'll take a break. We'll come back, take more of your questions. We're live here at Amalie Arena. We're getting you set for Lightning and Panthers tonight. Brian Burns and Bobby the Chief Taylor will have their pregame skate show at 6. Network pregames at 6:30. And then, of course, the puck drops with Dave and Phil at 7 o'clock. And you can listen to it all right here on Lightning Power Play.
This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
It's going to be interesting to see what type of game develops tonight. Obviously, Kucherov not on the lineup, Dave. The Panthers have gotten off to a nice start. Sam Bennett had the big night the other day, a hat trick. And we know the history between these two teams the last couple of years. In fact, we're asking one of those questions today on Twitter, at Bolts Radio. Right now, we don't get a chance to see all the teams, so understand that. What is the best rivalry in the NHL? And the Lightning and Panthers, it might not be one, might not be two. But there is definitely no love lost between the two teams. I mean, I think that's the start of a rivalry. You hate each other. You see them in the playoffs. Yeah. The fact that they play a lot in the preseason, and then what happened in preseason, Dave, certainly adds fuel to the fire. I don't know where this one ranks. I can tell you right now, in that Eastern Conference, you know, you have Pittsburgh-Philly, which is always fun. Yeah. Pittsburgh-Washington. You could almost make the case the Lightning and the Islanders has been a nice rivalry just because they've met in the playoffs the last couple of years. But I feel like there's an extra level of nastiness between these two teams over the last 16 months that I think lends itself to a very nice rivalry.
Well, the game that we had in Orlando with everything that went into that, with Vasilevsky getting knocked over and the tempers flaring and all of that, how many years did the teams play two or three preseason games every year?
Yeah.
And we didn't see any of that.
Enough.
And then they would play often, not this year, but often two in a row to start the regular season. That would be five in a row.
Yeah.
You see a team five in a row, sometimes your blood starts to boil, and it's not always the same lineup because those preseason games would have extra guys that wouldn't be on the opening night roster, but it was in the second week, so the roster was much closer.
Yeah.
To the opening night roster.
Yeah.
So I think it speaks to where this rivalry is at. Now, the second game, the one here in the preseason, and then the one down in Sunrise, you know, those were more regular games, right?
Right.
It didn't carry over. But it doesn't take much.
No.
Like, you just need to have a match lit, and there's gasoline nearby.
Well, you heard Sergachev answer the question today. And basically, I don't know if it was Paul PK who asked just about the rivalry, and I'm going to misquote Sergachev. If we find the cut, we can play it later in the show. If not, it's not a huge deal. Basically, like, that's not going to happen tonight. We're not going to allow
running,
somebody to run
Vasilevsky.
That's not going to happen tonight. You know, good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. You know, I don't know what you take from that, but I think it certainly grabs the attention of the players of what happened the previous game. So we'll see how that plays out. I think tonight, you know, you get into the regular season games, and even though we're only, you know, a handful of games in, you can go through the motions with some of these games because it's just a long year. I think now when the Panthers are on that schedule, there's a little extra, you know, the Panthers are in town.
Yeah.
That's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah.
And I think for me, for you, that's going to be ideal. And
by the way, this is one reason we were never really – in this camp of vocalizing this as an organization. By we, I mean the Lightning.
Yeah.
And the people that follow the Lightning and work
for
the Lightning. But, you know, there are some organizations that liked facing another opponent eight times. We never had that here. It was like, really? We're seeing the Thrashers again? You know, back when it was really division heavy.
Yeah, right.
Now, we had that last year for pandemic reasons. But, you know, the Rangers and Islanders and the Rangers and Devils, they love playing each other eight times, not only from a travel standpoint, but that was much more intense than Rangers-Calgary, let's say. But we went away from the eight games within the division every year against every team in your division. But that would be an argument like, you're like, boy, these games against the Panthers are so fun and entertaining. It'd be great if we had more of those and less of some Western team that's coming in once.
And I guess, I mean, I get why they want to do it, right?
I get why they want to do it, too.
You want to see all these players, right? Give it.
Oh, you mean why they have the...
Yeah. I mean, you know, you don't get a chance to see Connor McDavid every year.
Right.
And if you can, you play him maybe once or twice. So I get that part, but... These teams play each other so much in the preseason that it almost makes up for you know, that situation. Stan wants to know, where do you think Matthew Joseph fits best on this Lightning team? He's an interesting guy from the simple point that he can move up and down the lineup because of that speed. And I think he gives you just enough skill, Dave, where you're intrigued by his long-term fit in with this team. I don't look at Matthew Joseph and say top six, but I'm intrigued by it because I think he's going to get chances. He's gotten some shorthanded chances this year,
that's
right?
What I was going to say. I think his most impactful time so far this year in a really small sample size, three games, has been killing penalties with Belmar. The two of them definitely work really well together, and Joseph has had at least two, if not three, shorthanded breakaways that I can remember.
Yes.
So there he's been extremely impactful, and he was a big part of that 4-for-4 performance on the penalty kill the other night in Washington.
Yep.
5-on-5, I think it's been a little less impactful, and he's moved around a little bit too. But let's see how he does tonight with his old line mates from last year.
There's something to be said for that, having some success with that. But Joseph, it's funny because he intrigues me. I think Ross Colton intrigues me because we had talked about this last year when he was moving up and down the lineup or there were some injuries. And we said, why not throw him in the top six? You know,
And we may see that.
We may. Yeah. And the thing is, I don't know. It's tough with younger players, Dave, because I don't know what their ceiling is. I think we have a better idea of what Joseph's ceiling might be than Colton's. But I think sometimes, too, when you're not a first-round pick, sometimes you get pigeonholed and say, well, you know, since you were a third or fourth-round pick or undrafted, it means you have some deficiencies, and that's going to prevent you from being a top-line player. Some people may look at it that way.
Yeah, I don't think the Lightning look at it that
way. I don't think they do either. And I think it's probably one of the reasons why Al thought maybe Radish gets an opportunity to go in the top six right away.
He was a second-round pick.
He was a second-round pick. He had a little bit of a pedigree there. So it's interesting. But Stan appreciates the question there. John wants to know, do you think Julian Breezewell made any calls to Seattle to reacquire Alex Barry-Boulet?
I don't think they're going to try and reacquire Alex Barry-Boulet. We talked about this yesterday.
We did.
Let's see if he gets put on waivers. He was a healthy scratch.
Yeah.
Back-to-back, and he didn't stay in their lineup.
If they do, and I don't think Seattle would just hold on to him to stick it to the Lightning. You know, like
that wouldn't be the reason to do it, but you're like, we still feel that this guy can make an impact. We just need to let him get acclimated. Everybody has to get acclimated on Seattle. But it becomes a question of, if you're keeping him, who are you not keeping?
Right.
Certainly when Gord comes back.
Yes.
But maybe even before then.
I think what I told you before, and I still firmly believe this was Seattle. I mean, they were built differently than Vegas. And I think they have a lot of guys who are fast, who are gritty. You know, Jared McCann, you know, is a high-end pick, but really has never put it all together. There's some upside there, but they don't have a lot of game breakers.
What you're missing in the expansion draft.
Yes.
You can get good NHL players, but it's hard to find game breakers unless for some reason some team left a game breaker unprotected, which some of us were wondering, like would Landeskog, for example.
Sure.
Because, I mean, he had some issues in terms of his
contract
extension.
With Colorado there.
Right. Yeah. And like with the Lightning leave McDonough unprotected, we were floating that. Like McDonough, I don't know if we call him
a game breaker,
but he's very elite. Like he's an elite defenseman.
Yes.
But the expansion draft as it currently exists for both Vegas and Seattle, and Vegas did a really good job of kind of working the system to accumulate as much talent as they possibly could and lots of draft picks as well. And they also hit on some guys that were mistakenly left unprotected.
Yes.
Thinking
yes.
of Marchessault, for example, and Shea Theodore, but Riley Smith.
Carlson.
Right. Yeah, like these guys were available. Yeah. I think the teams that made them available didn't think that they would reach the levels that they've reached with Vegas. But Seattle probably has been more what it was supposed to happen, which is, you know, you get your Tanevs.
Brandon Tanevs.
Right.
Right, right.
McCann.
Good players.
Giordano, who's been a really good player, but, you know, he's in his late 30s now, I think.
Yeah. Gord. Gord might be their most dynamic player.
You could make the case. I mean, I think they were really excited to get him, but they were able to get him because the Lightning had so many good players that they couldn't protect all of them. And so that's the challenge. And therefore, you need to draft well.
You do.
You need to hit some home runs right off the bat. Certainly the first year you get a top pick. Not the top pick, but a top pick. And then if they struggle this year, you know, they're going to get another very high pick. And even if they don't struggle, you know, they may be able to make some trades and get some first rounders that will help them build up organizational depth. But beyond organizational depth, if you get enough first rounders, you may get some game breakers.
Very true.
But it's hard to come out of the gates with game breakers. And I think if, as much as Carlson had a phenomenal year that first year in Vegas, and Marchessault was a revelation, and I've always liked Theodore, I was frankly surprised Anaheim
gave up on
left him unprotected.
Yeah.
So there's no question about that. And Fleury had a really good, I mean, he had a good career in Vegas, but that first year he was really, really good.
Yeah.
I think if you were to talk to the people in Vegas, even they would acknowledge that that first year was a lot about us versus the world. Nobody thinks that we're as good, chip on our shoulder. But then after they'd been in the league a couple of years, now you got Pacioretty. Now you got Mark Stone, right? Like, now you're bringing in guys who really are game breakers.
Sure.
At least they have been at the NHL level. So Seattle is at the beginning of the process here.
But if you feel like you're
and maybe they felt Barry Boulay could be a game breaker, but the early returns are whatever they claimed him right before their first game, right?
Yes.
Because it was right before opening night and they played that night after the Lightning and Penguins played. So he wouldn't have played in that game. But he could have played in game two and he didn't.
Yes.
And then they had games three and four, I believe, as back to backs. He played in game three and had the lowest ice time of anybody and then did not play the next night. So it's not like he just jumped right in.
No. It may take him.
And carved a place for himself. But the question was, would the Lightning look at reacquiring him? I think at this point, I would be surprised if they actually gave up an asset to get him back.
Yeah.
When I'm still, to me, the jury is still out as to whether or not he gets put back on waivers.
Yes. I would agree with that.
I wouldn't say he's definitely getting put back on waivers, but I'd say that the jury is out.
Yeah, and I think if you're Seattle too, I think we brought up the point yesterday that unless he just doesn't perform at all, if you're looking to just bring in talent, that's one way to do it. You may want to just hold on to him. Again, barring that he's not completely awful, which we don't think he would be at the NHL level, so we'll see how that plays out. At Bolts Radio, if you want to hit us up on Twitter, you can. We'll take a break. We'll come back for one final segment. He is Dave Mishkin. I am Greg Linnelli, right here on Lightning Power Play.
This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
Remember the exhibition game?
Some, not a lot, but some, you know. Yeah, I mean, the Ram Vasi, I don't think they'll do it again. Because you know what happened after that hit, and we're not gonna let that happen. So we're here to try to win the game, not fight every other opportunity that we get. So we're gonna go out there and try to win the game.
I would agree with that. Great job, Steve.
Yeah,
Steve Versnick, our producer, getting that.
Steve
soundbite.
Was on top of.
He was listening to the show. He was listening to the show.
Mm-hmm.
Said what? By the way, speaking of Steve, we have another Steven.
I know.
Who's working with us right now.
Steve has somebody to take a little bit off his plate.
Steven.
Maybe more than a little.
Cusimano. He's not. Our intern.
Yeah.
Who's going to be with us here throughout the year. And he just drove in from Arizona.
I wouldn't say he just drove in.
He got in here 7 hours ago, right?
I guess that qualifies as judge.
Last night, he said.
You made it seem like he pulled
he
into the
parking
lot.
He just pulled in literally and said, hey, guys, I'm here for the job. Let's go. Which would have been great, by the way. But he hustled to get here.
Yeah.
What's the longest trip you've ever made in the car?
Like, you've had, not on a player,
no,
not
just,
with a team, you
yeah,
mean just...
Yeah, just
family. Yeah, from here to the Northeast. But, you stop along the way. And we did a trip when the kids were really young. My mother-in-law's in Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And, you know, my mom's in New Jersey. And we did that whole region. So, I mean, at the farthest point, it was whatever it would be.
Whatever that was.
Yeah, like 25 hours. But yeah. It's not like we did that all in one shot. I think the longest drive that we did in one shot was about 20.
That's a good shot.
That's a good shot.
That is a really good shot. We've done it.
I'm not a big fan of driving in the middle of the night.
No.
Like, if you get me up at 2:30,
you'll make
start then.
Yeah.
So I've had a little bit of sleep. That's probably preferable to, like, let's leave at 7 a.m. and just drive until noon the next day.
Yeah.
Like, that would be tough for me.
When you were younger.
Yeah, I guess
when you were
so.
Younger,
I never
you
had to do it when I was younger, though.
Yeah, why would you?
I never had to make a trip that long.
No.
Now, have you ever done something like renting an RV?
No.
Your family's still young. I've never done it either, but that would be a very
long
trip, but you do that in...
It'd be kind of neat.
Yeah, you see the country.
A little camping? You camper?
No. But the RV, is the RV really considered camping? Like, camping, I think you're like... putting a tent up, you're in the elements. Like the RV, you go to the RV park, right? You plug it in.
I think when you say the RV,
plumbing.
I think...
Don't you have plumbing on the RV?
Now,
that's not
now you know
really
I mentioned that.
Camping.
Hold on. Now that you mentioned that, the only time I think of the RV, you mentioned the plumbing, is National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation.
Yeah.
Hey, Clark! You know, and he's out there, and they're like, what's that smell? That's my only thing, you know, with the RV. But that would be fun. That would be fun. We usually see. We've tried to do that trip with two kids under the age of five. That's just torture.
Yeah.
That's just.
I've done
torture.
That.
It's brutal.
Yeah,
it's brutal. Lucas chiming in on the Barry Boulay topic. He said, "Will not surprise me to see Barry Boulay back on waivers, especially once Gord and Yarncrow come back to the lineup."
Didn't I just say that? Is he plagiarizing me?
When did he do this? Hold on. So it was 6 minutes ago. So he probably did.
But I'm not sure if I said, did I say I would not be surprised? Steve's going to have to go back and listen.
Yeah, we may have to.
That's all right. You can plagiarize away. And maybe
but
it was
Lucas
an independent
does listen,
thought.
And I appreciate that about him because he definitely likes to weigh in, and we appreciate that.
He likes to plagiarize.
Well, I don't want to put words in his mouth. Yeah, Rick asked the question, how do you ask a question on Power Lunch? I just said, tweet back at us.
Yeah.
And now he follows me on Twitter.
That counted as a question, though. One question
that's
per
actually
show.
A good,
no, that's
actually,
not a rule.
That's actually a good point by you. This one comes from Bill. How do you think Sergachev has looked so far, and what do you think his offensive totals could look like at the end of the year? I think Sergachev could put up 15 goals.
Yeah, I think his confidence level is higher
than
it's been maybe in the last couple of years offensively because he's seeing pucks go in. He said, you know, preseason doesn't count when he talked after the Washington game, but it still went in, and then he scored in the third game of the year, which is the earliest he's ever scored to start a season. The other part for Sergachev, too, and it's not just goals, it's assists, but let's see how much time that second power play unit actually gets.
Yeah.
Is it going to be like a quarter of a two-minute power play, or is it more like a half of a two-minute power play? Like, how quickly does the first unit get off?
Does it change with Kucherov not being there now, too?
Well, Palat goes to the first unit, and Colton is on the second
unit. He does, but I mean,
unit.
In terms of how long they would stay out.
I don't
out.
Know. I mean, last year, that first unit with Palat stayed out.
A good portion.
A good portion of the time. But if Sergachev gets, basically what I'm saying is, if Sergachev gets more power play time, and the way he gets more power play time would be if his unit is out there more, unless for some reason they tried to swap him and Hedman, which we saw that at points last year too. And in fact, his two assists in the Detroit game, he was out with Stamkos and Kucherov, remember?
Right. Yeah.
Because Kucherov and Sergachev assisted on both Stamkos' power play goals. That was just a function of them being on the major and the way they switched things up. They were in the middle of a change. But I think if Sergachev actually gets more time, actual minutes on the power play, he may have an opportunity to add to those totals. But I go back to what you've said pretty much since the start of camp, Greg. If he shoots and gets it on the net, he's going to have a chance to score goals and get points.
Yeah. He almost was kind of enjoying the fact that he has guys going to the front to get and also just get him the puck. You know, he mentioned Maroon. He mentioned
Schuster.
Schuster, right. I mean, you know, there's something to be said, though, I think, for being when you're out on the ice, guys are looking to you to generate offense, even if you're from the back end. I mean, that gives you a little bit of confidence. Hey, they look at me as the guy to generate some scoring opportunities. Yeah. And if they're looking for me to create a bomb there from the top so they can create some chaos in front, that gives you a little bit more confidence, I would think. You know, I don't know how that's going to play out. He also mentioned, too, you know, Cooch will be ready for the Olympics. Speaking of the Olympics.
No salary cap in the Olympics.
Steven Wino says, a little Canadian Olympic roster nugget. Avalanche defenseman Samuel Girard says GM Doug Armstrong told him he's not on Canada's long list of players eligible to make the team.
Is that surprising? I mean, Girard's a good player, but they have so many Canadian defensemen, don't they?
I feel like Girard, there's a lot of hype with him.
Yeah, I like him as a player. But, I mean, Steve Goldstein, I mentioned we were chatting this morning, and we were talking about Gudas a little bit. Because I told him Gudas and Palat were really close. I don't think he knew that.
Yeah.
But they are. Mm-hmm. So are they still close? I'm like, well, I guess so. You wouldn't know it to see them compete against each other. But they are. And then he said, because we were talking about Kucherov with the Olympics, and he said, do you think Gudas will be on the Czech team? And I said, I don't know. I said, he could be. He's like, we were trying to think of prominent Czech defensemen. Now, like, Chernak is Slovakian. So that's
correct. You have to make sure.
Yeah, like Chara is Slovakian if he's still going to go. But I couldn't think off the top of my head, and I'm having a hard time thinking. I mean, I know there are a lot of Canadian defensemen that probably are going to go, like Drew Doughty, who's leading all defensemen in points this year with 6. Kings have been scoring some goals.
Yeah, right.
Do you not have him?
I mean, somebody says, let's see how this plays out.
Theodore's Canadian.
Yeah, I think he is, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, that guy's a stud.
There's no doubt. Like, it was just interesting. Girard, I think maybe it's more hype than production, although he's a good player. But I think you're right.
What about Cale Makar? Is Cale Makar Canadian? I know he went to college in the U.S.
I don't know.
Yeah, we're going to have to look that up. This is the sort of stuff I haven't committed to memory yet. But, like,
do you have a better feel?
Who would you rather take off Colorado, Cale Makar or Samuel Girard? I would probably take Makar.
At this point, you're right. Cale's
Canadian. Yeah. He's Canadian.
At this point, I think you're right. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I'm not even hesitating on that.
Both Steves gave me
can you believe
that
it?
Info.
Yeah.
Almost Steven, simultaneously.
Steven. We have to go Steven.
Yes. Sorry. Steven.
Rick, by the way, chimed in. He says, can Corey Perry keep up the pace and minutes of the first line? Has he played this much in the last few years? Curious.
Well, he was used. Look, I confess that I was not seeing a lot of Dallas Stars games 2 years ago or Montreal games last year. But when the Canadians got into the playoffs, he was playing on what they termed the fourth line with Eric Staal and Yoel Armia. Now, they played more than, like, fourth line minutes for some teams that might not play their fourth line a lot. Did they play as much as Cizikas, Martin, and Clutterbuck? Probably not. But that was his role on that Montreal team, where there were times when he got bumped up. I'm sure there were times. And he also saw regular power play time. I confess, I don't remember in Dallas. I don't want to say that he was on that power play, though, in Dallas. I mean, you had Radulov and Pavelski and Sagan and Ben and Klingberg.
Now, that's
and
when they
Haskinen.
Were all healthy. You know, we didn't.
Yeah, when we saw them in the final. Yeah. And, I mean, Sagan was playing through an injury, but he played in that series and was on the power play.
He did.
Maybe Perry was on the second unit, but that's kind of like the Lightning situation. Right. The first unit.
Can he keep up?
Tends to be out there more. So,
I don't
can
know.
He keep up? He is doing what he needs to do to have success in the league. I mean, I don't think that he was ever a skater like Braden Point, but he doesn't need to be a skater like Braden Point. He doesn't need to be the first guy in on the forecheck, certainly not on the line that he's on now.
Correct.
But what he can do is get to the front of the net and put on his worm superhero costume, so he has that nickname, and squeeze in tight spaces and find pucks and put them in.
I'd say that's probably the way to answer that question. You know, speed-wise, I think a veteran guy like that has an idea where to go.
Yeah.
And I think we have to probably take that into consideration. But look, your guess is as good as mine. We'll find out. And if John Cooper feels like it's not working, he is certainly going to make those changes for sure. Let's see here. What else we got?
I think we've exhausted all of them, maybe.
I think we might have. as we
outlasted the morning skate guys too.
Remember, in
the Pittsburgh game last week, it was Crosby, Gensel, and Aston Reese out here after they were still going after we had signed off at 1 o'clock.
It's going to be Knight and Vassy.
Yeah.
Tonight, which will be a good matchup. And that's something that
Knight has, we have talked a lot about Knight, like how is he going to handle the expectations and internally, I think there are some internally as in like Panther fans. I don't know about inside the locker room.
Yeah.
But there are huge expectations for Spencer Knight. But, and again, I've never talked to him. I've never even, really been in a press conference where he's spoken. But just the way he carries himself on the ice.
You've been impressed with.
Not just his ability as a goalie, but also, like, his demeanor, his aura, if you will. Like, he's very calm. Like, he just seems like he's very calm and composed in the net. And if that's actually how he is in terms of his personality, that probably will serve him well.
Yes. You know, it's interesting, before we end the show, that can have a positive effect on Bobrovsky. Not the calm, cool, collected. If Spencer Knight's playing well, look at what Bobrovsky's done.
Yeah.
First couple of games. I don't know how that's going to lead in the regular season, but if you see the other guy is playing well,
yeah,
that would push me.
Yeah. Well, Drieger played well last year.
He did, but this feels different.
Yeah.
Because Knight's the future.
Yeah.
And I think Bobrovsky, there's some time. Are you going to be here?
Right.
Beyond this year? I think that's a legitimate question. You want to pay your backup $10 million? In a cash-strapped era? I don't know. Maybe not. All right. Well, we're going to be back here after we go warm up.
Yes.
In our homes. And we'll be on the airwaves at 6:30 with the network pregame show. And I'll talk to you then, partner.
All right. Talk to you in a few.
Thanks to Steve Ersnick. Thanks to Steven Cusimano, our new intern. And we're glad to have you here, buddy. Appreciate it. And thank you all for listening. We will be with you again in this format, noon to 1, recapping this game. Hopefully it's a win. If not, we'll break it all down. You've been listening to Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play.